Hey guys. So my name is Vasi Mitalets, and I work for Telerik as a technical evangelist, and NativeScript in particular is my favorite technology that we have. So let me start by, explain what NativeScript is. It's basically a cross-platform framework that allows you to build native applications with native UI just using JavaScript. And the first thing that you probably be thinking is like, well, is it a phone gap or what is it? And the answer is actually it's not phone gap because basically the UI that you're building in there is native. There is no web view and there's no browser and there's no DOM. The other comparison that you could often make is like, okay, so is it like Xamarin? So it kind of is like Xamarin, except we don't do cross compilation. So the JavaScript code that you're writing stays as a JavaScript even at runtime. And then if you want to compare it to React Native or Titanium, then basically the big difference is, and that pretty much applies to Xamarin and Cordova as well, is that with NativeScript, you actually get direct access to the native API. So you don't have to write, let's say if you want to use this magical function on iOS, you don't have to write Xcode to wrap it up to expose it to your application. You can do it directly from JavaScript code. And why would you want to use it? Well, the first thing is skills reuse. So if you know JavaScript or TypeScript or Angular 2, then you already know half the story and you can go and start coding. The other thing is there's a strong point around code reuse. So you could use NPM modules that are out there. So if there's an NPM module, for example, that is not browser dependent, then you can install it into your project and then you could actually reap the benefits from that particular module. You could also use third-party iOS and Android libraries. So if you had somebody like that wrote you this beautiful iOS calendar that you really want to use in the application, well, no problem. Just import it to your project and you can start using it straight away. And like I mentioned before, and that's a very, very big point, you have the easy access to the native APIs. So you don't have to write any wrappers or anything. It's just there, and you can just start coding against it. And I'll show you an example in a moment. But the other big point as well is like it's open source. So the framework itself, you can actually go to GitHub and then see what is made of, how it's built. You can fork it, make changes to it, or even you can contribute, which we would like you to do. So if you're interested in contributing, you can actually just go to nativescript.org/contribute and you can see what sort of things we expect from the contributors. So I think this image should kind of like explain most of it. Like you should think of NativeScript as the bridge between JavaScript and your native platforms. And if you look at this example, if you wanted to write something specifically for Android, you could, for example, instantiate android.text.format.time. And this, this is JavaScript, even though JavaScript and Java, they look very similar syntax-wise. But this is actually JavaScript that will instantiate a native object of time. And then you can run native functions on it. Similarly, if you wanted to use an alert view on iOS platform, what you can do is actually just instantiate new UI alert view and then set its message, add a button, call show, and then bang, in NativeScript, you actually get this native iOS alert view. And the first thing you're probably thinking now is like, how the hell do I know that there is a property message and add button function, etc.? And does Telerik provide all the documentation for all those components? Well, we don't, because we don't have to. This documentation, for example, for UI alert view is on Apple developer portal, because UI alert view is an Apple component and all the documentation works. And basically the attributes and the functions and everything else, they're matched like for like within JavaScript. So how does this work? Well, the secret is that we're running all the code on a JavaScript virtual machine. So for Android, we're using Google V8. For iOS and Windows Phone, which is going to come in the future, we're using WebKit's JavaScript core. So all your code, that's very ambitious, all your code pretty much runs at the JavaScript virtual machine, and anything that is meant to go in and perform an operation on the native layer goes through the like a bridge process, where basically first thing we do is say, okay, we're going into metadata, which is a set of all the available functions and types within the native platform. So if you're making a call, we go into metadata and we're trying to find the equivalent of the function that you're trying to call at the native platform. Then we have type conversion. So we take all the inputs into that you pass into the function and we translate them into the native ones. And then finally, there's a call dispatcher that takes the results from the metadata and type conversion and then make and performs the actual call. So that then it runs in the native layer, and then when we get results back, it comes back to type conversion, which translates your result into JavaScript, and then bang, we are back again in JavaScript. And the important thing is that where does this metadata thing come from, right? So we have this thing called metadata generating process. And basically it's process that what it does is when you build your application and you say, okay, I'm building for Android version, API version 22. So the metadata generating process will go look at that specific SDK and then go and find all the functions and all the types and we inject them into the JavaScript virtual machine. So if I come back quickly here, for example, on the JavaScript virtual machine, there is no such thing as android.txt.format.time. On which one? Is it on Google V8? But because of the injection, we injected the Android namespace together with all the functions and types in there. That's why you can access it from the from V8. Go back. Skip one. And then the other thing is, like, if you have third-party libraries, you can as well, like, when we import that amazing UI calendar that I was mentioning before, again, the metadata process generator, what it will do is basically take that library, go find all the types, all the functions, and inject it in the virtual machine so that you can use it from the code. And basically, this means that you have day zero support for any features that come in, either in the SDKs, new releases of iOS or Android, or with your libraries. So let's say if Apple was to release today this amazing feature that allows it to teleport your phone from one side of the room to the other, you could actually just build your application against the latest SDK or the latest version of Xcode, and then basically just write whatever namespace teleport and your phone will go over there. If they promise, it should probably work. So let's have a look at a quick example. So if we call a new Java IO file and give it a path, the type conversion service will go and translate our path into Java lang string, which is Android's version of string or Java string. Then the metadata will go and find the constructor, the native constructor. And then finally, the call dispatcher, we execute that and we get like a dual result. So on the native side, we get a native instance of our file object. But on the JavaScript side or the native script side, we get this custom proxy object, which is in JavaScript, which is basically linked to the native one. So every time you make a call on the file object, that gets delegated to the native one. And if there's an event that is triggered on the native object, it gets propagated back to your custom proxy object. And to be fair, when you actually develop it, you don't even have to be aware of that. Like, you don't have to think about it. I'm just telling you how it works underneath. Because normally when you write, you only care about this part of the story. But there's the big thing. Like, so far I showed you how it works on iOS and Android. And obviously you don't want to be writing code specific to one platform and the other, because that's just missing the point. And that's why we have this thing called native script modules, which is an abstraction layer of all the most common either UI components or any functionality that you would want to do. So the way it works, like, you have your abstraction, you have different launchers, you have access to device sensors, loads of different things. There's a whole library of them. And basically, for each functionality that I want to use, you write at the abstraction layer, and then when you build the application, your code then gets translated into the JavaScript code that is equivalent for either Android or iOS or whichever platform you're building. So that you don't have to think about, what was the namespace on iOS to do it. And then naturally, all this code then executes on the native platforms. So I think this example probably make more sense. It's basically all you have to do, let's say you want to open a file, like we were looking at it before. You can require a file system module. Then using that module, you create a file object. And if that runs on Android, then we get this, we get equivalent of it will be new java.io.file. However, if you run that code on iOS, then this will get translated into this very verbose and descriptive explanation of how to open a file or create a file. Yeah, does that make sense so far? Cool. And there's another module that is actually quite interesting. Since you're in JavaScript, and if I told you, oh, can you call that web service and get some data? And if you're in JavaScript mode, the first thing you go like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to make an Ajax call and retrieve the data. However, there is this thing where both Apple and Google, they put a lot of effort to actually allow you to retrieve data from web services at the native layer, which is very, very efficient. So that's why we created this HTTP module that if you require it, you can then call get.json, pass in the URL, and then this will perform a native call and then return the result into back JavaScript for you. So that will be even more performant than an Ajax call. And there's loads of them available in there. They're not only modules that we build at Telerik, but as well there's there are community-built modules. So you could find, for example, one text-to-speech. So you could actually go to npm install text-to-speech and you add it to your project. And actually, my colleague TJ Van Tol, he did one demo where he downloaded text-to-speech and there was another npm module, knock-knock jokes. And basically, every time you press the button, the phone would be knock-knock, who's there, bad joke kind of thing. There's loads of others, so these are done by a lot of people. And the other interesting probably be SQLite. So if you want to do your own offline, you could use SQLite. It's straightforward, very easy. You can get it running in 5 minutes. So you know how more or less this whole thing works. So how do you go about building an app now? So there are two ways of doing it. One is with Telerik Platform, so that's our paid solution. And it's basically a set of different modules that has backend services, app builder, and loads of other ones. But in there, there's one tool called Telerik App Builder, which allows you to build NativeScript applications and as well Cordova apps, but we're talking about NativeScript today. And the other one, we have command line interface as well that you can install from NPM. And you could use either one or the other. And this one is open source, completely free. And pretty much in both of them, you can achieve exactly the same thing. So it's not that we're trying to push you into one or the other. Whichever you feel more comfortable with, you should probably use. So the big difference, I guess, is, and that'll be my next point. So App Builder has different IDs. So literally, you could use start building native web application if you have Chrome on your machine. You open Chrome, log into Telerik platform, and everything is already there. There's no installation, there's no setup. You could literally start developing like 5 minutes after this talk if you want. There's as well Visual Studio extension, which I'm going to show you in a moment. You could use a Sublime Text package. So if you like Sublime, and then yeah, command line interface like I mentioned before. So if you look at how would you use Visual Studio extension, so to get a Visual Studio and native script, when you can, for example, you get ability to create native script projects within Visual Studio. And then when you build the application, what we do is we use Telerik platform for the build. So all the builds happen in the cloud. So this is why you don't have to have anything set up on your machine. Whenever you want to say, oh, I want to build it for Android, what will happen, the code will be sent to our cloud. It will be built in there and then downloaded back to your machine. And the funny thing is as well, like you could actually use this for building iOS applications on a Windows machine without owning a Mac or even having one on the network because the builds happen in the cloud. And then once that's done, then you get your Android or iOS or whichever applications. There is a second part to it that you can as well use this process, which will generate you a special QR code. And that QR code is basically used with our companion app. So if you use the QR code, scan it in the companion app, then basically within the companion app that you can download from the public stores, you connect it to your project and then display it on your phone. So you don't have to have any cables or do any downloads or anything. You just basically scan the code and the app appears on your phone for testing and for development. And the second part that the companion app has, if you, for example, hold three fingers on the screen, if you're on iOS or there's a sync on Android, then every time you make a change in Visual Studio, then you call sync, and then automatically this will go and refresh your application. So you don't have to go and scan the code every time over and over again. You can just basically just refresh every time you want. Let's have a quick look at the CLI. So again, like I mentioned before, it's free and open source. You can go over to GitHub and check what it's made of. There's instructions on how to set it up and install it. So the trick with the CLI is that in order to develop using CLI, you actually have to have JDK, Apache, and Android SDK, and as of recently, Gradle, on your machine in order to develop, because the builds happen on your machine directly. And similarly, if you want to build iOS application, you have to have Xcode, Xcode CLI tools, and iOS SDK. And probably I should mention you have to have a Mac to do that, because again, the builds happen directly on your machine. But yeah, if you're comfortable with setting it up, we have quite extensive instructions that are idiot-proof. I mean, I managed to do it, so it's fine. And then you could use that. So one thing probably I missed so far, it's so you can use JavaScript to write your code. We as well have XML, or like it's pretty much like XAML, how you define the UI. And then there is as well CSS that allows you to style your application. So it is not exactly CSS. CSS is basically is inspired by the CSS that you have in the web browser. So pretty much for anything that we have, let's say a color and font size, we have to implement a native equivalent for it so that whenever you set us, say, a label color to blue, we have native code that actually performs the operation. And this means that there's obviously limitation. So the number of styles that we support is basically whatever we implemented. So the whole list is pretty much listed at our documentation. So if you search for supported properties at nativescript.org, you get there's actually quite a big list in there. And finally, one big thing is, okay, so there's no DOM, there's no browser, so there's no diff, right? Like your Android phone or your iOS phone, Windows phone, they don't have diffs on them, right? If there is a diff, it's only within the browser. But what they do have is basically they have different layouts. So you have an absolute layout and doc layout that you can use to style your and arrange your application. So like with absolute layout, you can put the components by providing the coordinates. Say, I want this button to be here, here, or there. We have doc layout where you could say, I want to have the first thing on the top, then on the right, on the left, and then this should be in the middle kind of thing. We have grid layout. So it kind of follows the concept of a table. So it kind of generates a native layout based on a grid, and then you can specify, I want this element to be in this row, while this one I want to be just in this specific cell kind of thing. My favorite, because it's the easiest, is the stack layout. So basically, every time you add an element, you can either do it vertically or horizontally. So you could, for example, say, I want to add a button, label, button, and kind of it just stacks downwards or sideways. The problem with it is that if you kind of stack things sideways and you say you have 800 pixels and you have three buttons of 400, so you go 400, 400, and you go the third one will go over the screen because we just say we're not telling it to go to new line. So what you can use instead is a wrap layout that basically go 400, 400, not enough space, new line 400 kind of thing. And all those layouts are 100% native. They're not HTML, JavaScript, or anything that requires NativeScript to do any magic. These are the layouts that exist natively on the platforms. So let's have a small demo, and then you can see how it works in action. Right, I'm going to open Visual Studio. So normally what you can do, I should probably open another Visual Studio just to show you. I already have a project open, and there's no time for me to build everything from scratch, but I'll show you, give you an idea more or less of what's available and what's possible when this loads. So after you install the NativeScript extension into Visual Studio, you actually can go and say, I want to create a new NativeScript application, and then it's pretty much like one of the projects. And you see, like, you already have a set of templates that you can build, and then that would like set up the project for you, and you'd be ready to go. And you have pretty much two choices. You have you choose which template you want to use, and as well whether you want to use JavaScript or TypeScript. And if any of you have .NET experience, then probably TypeScript should be the way. TypeScript is just great for this kind of things. Anyway, I'll just go to my project. So what happens here is when I have my project initially, what I probably have to do is we have this additional tab called App Builder. So what I can do from here is say build my project in cloud, and then I can choose whether I want to do Android or iOS. So since I have an Android device here, I'll go for Android. And then again, we'll have two options. I can either build it as an app package, or I can build it for the companion app. So if I build it for the companion app, it's basically what I'll get is I'll get a QR code, which is over there. And now when I have my companion app that I downloaded from Google Play, I can scan this code, and an application appears in my phone. So I already scanned that. So I'll just show you quickly my screen on my phone. Let's hope my girlfriend doesn't call me. She called me last time I was presenting it. It's like, hello world. I was like, no, hello Aurora. Anyway, so the first application is pretty much like, I'll show you what you need to do to build a hello world application. So all we need to do is create ourselves an XML file, and I'll make it bigger. And this is pretty much the definition. You have a page, and inside you say, I want to have a label with a text saying hello world. Or I can say, hello from future decoded. I can save that. And what I can do now is basically say, go and synchronize this project with the cloud. And if I come back to my phone, I can call sync. And then now this goes and then updates the application. And now it says, hello from future decoded. Nice and simple. And the cool thing is as well, like if you're ever building an application for somebody, like somebody gave you £20,000, say you have 3 months, build this app for me. And then whenever they want to see how far you've gone so far, or whenever they want to give you feedback, you don't have to, you know, fiddle with anything. Just give them the QR code, and then they can sync it every time you want to have a chat about what's the current state of the application. So I don't think you're going to get much money for building Hello World applications. So let me show you the mechanics of how the whole thing works. So if we wanted to have... No. An example where you have a couple of buttons and the labels, like pretty much like a sign-up form or something. So let me sync that and reload this, and I'll take you through the code. Sync it. So what we have two things. We have a TypeScript file, and we have an XML file to build the example you just seeing there. So the first part we have, I'm using a stack layout to say I want to stack all the elements one below the other. And then I have a few sets of, you know, labels and text fields, one for name, email, Twitter handle. I have a button, and as well I have a label where I want to display the results. And by the way, this is the bad way of doing it. I'll show you the good way later, so don't try to learn anything from here just yet. Well, some of it, not everything. So basically what I'm doing here is I have my text field name, and I'm giving an ID. And same thing I'm doing for email and Twitter handle and the button. So that within my form, when I load this particular view, what I'm doing is I'm getting each of the elements based on the ID. So I'm saying, get me the one, the name one, the email one, the Twitter handle, and I'm catching those text fields. So that later on, when I look at my sign up button, I'm adding a function on tap function. So whenever you press this, this function executes. So now I'm basically saying, if any of the fields is empty, then I want to print an error message. However, if we have them filled in, so I can say, and I press sign up. now we get like a success message, which is this part over here. So obviously, the bad part about this is like basically very much like WinForms, where you kind of have your all your UI here, but then in your actual code, you have to still know that this thing is a text box, and you have to know the ID handle and everything, and that can be quite painful. So the next thing that we pretty much be using is MVVM. Any of you here use MVVM before? Yeah? Oh, I would expect more. Come on, guys. MVVM is great. And it's a Microsoft thing. So let me show you. So in the next example, have a journey calculator. Let me synchronize that, refresh. Cool. So I'll start over here. And there's already a little bit of TypeScript here. So what I'm starting with is creating a small TypeScript class called Journey Info that has three attributes. I have distance, miles per gallon, and fuel cost. And what I'm doing is like when I'm starting my page, I'm creating an instance of the Journey Info. And then when I'm starting the page, I'm setting that Journey Info as the binding context of my page. Yeah? So basically, once this is set as the binding context for the page, then I can do stuff like this, where I have a text field, and I'm saying, I want to bind the text attribute to distance. And similarly, I want to bind the text attribute of the second one to MPG and fuel cost, which basically means that every time I change any of those attributes here, so I can say it's not 24 miles, it's 200 miles, this will automatically update my JavaScript attribute to 200. And then this applies to pretty much all of them. And as well, when I loaded my project, when I loaded the page, the initial values that we had here, the 24, 30, and 120, they were already in there because they're bound together. And this means that basically later on, when I had my calculate function, you see, I didn't have to go anywhere and say, oh, go and find this text field and retrieve the text attribute. No, I didn't, because basically I own the journey info. The journey info is actually part of my JavaScript code, and it basically only shares the attribute with the UI. So that's how you can actually completely separate your UI from the application logic. The only problem here that we have is our journey info is not an observable object at this very moment. So if I was to update any of those attributes directly from my JavaScript, the UI will not know that the value changed, because basically there is no way of me telling it like, hey, this is changed. So that's why, for example, I still kind of had to. So that's why this is half good way of doing it. I still had to get my result label, retrieve it by ID, and update the text attribute. So what would be the fix for that? Well, I could make my journey info an observable object. And then this will work actually both ways, not just one. And that's why I'm going to show you the next example, which uses it. And this is a game I'm going to make a fortune on one day. There's a lot of people who don't believe me. And I can't blame them, not when they see the first version of it. Oh, I messed up. Oh, I didn't synchronize, did I? Did I sing? Okay, let's try again. So it's a very simple game. And the idea is that you get numbers from 0 to 9, and I put them in random order when you start the game. And then at any given time, you have to guess whether the next number is lower or higher, right? It's amazing. I don't claim I came up with it. I wish I did, because oof. So the way you build this application, you probably want to start with creating a view model. So this time we're going to set up an engine first. So I create a nice TypeScript class, and then in here we have stuff like what's the current card, what's the score, what's the streak, how many cards we've got left. But as well, we have some functions that says, okay, I have a function to start new game, to go higher, to go lower, and a lot of other code. But as well, at the end, what I'm doing is I'm exporting an instance of the of my engine, so that in the code behind of my view, where is it? Down view here. I can actually go and then require the module I just built as a model, and then I can take the model game engine and set it as the binding context. And now the separation gets even better, because now this particular TypeScript file could be specific for maybe some UI operations of my view, but the actual engine of how the game should be working is completely separated. I could even take that engine and import it into a web project, and it will work just fine, for as long as the web project can use TypeScript. So then I set it my game engine as the binding context, and then finally, if we look at the UI, I can start doing start binding to my functions and to attributes. So for example, the new game button, I'm binding to start new game over there, to a tap event. But as well, my current card, which the current card text attribute, I'm binding to label. But the interesting thing as well we can do is we can have expressions. So this label over here that says card left 0, this is a single label, which basically every time cards left attributes changes, basically this expression will be executed and then pasted in there. So how does the application now work? I can, you know, go new game, and then I can go higher, lower, and then you see I'm getting points and things go up and down. And so probably should point to a few things here. So my up-down engine is an observable. So that's why the two-way binding works. And there's two ways of updating an attribute. I can either call this.set, and then I say what attribute I want to update and provide the value. And this will automatically go and change my score to 0 and tell the UI, hey, score just changed. So update yourself. Or I can do it this way, where I could say this.score equals 0. And the difference will be the score will change to 0, but not in the UI. It will only change in the code. So there might be some cases where you want to make some calculations first, and then until you're ready, you could actually, you know, just set them directly, and then at the end, just call set and say update the UI kind of thing. What else? I always miss things that I want to show here. There's the other one where you can say this.get, and then you could actually have a function that returns something. So for example, in XML, I could literally bind current card. Instead of binding it to attribute, I could bind it to a function that returns a value. So this could be a case where you have database with people's date of birth, but in the UI you want to show age. So what you could do is you could have a function that basically says return this.get date of birth and then calculate age. And then basically this function will be called every time date of birth changes, and will update the age on the screen. Just one example. Cool. You guys have any questions so far on how things are done from Visual Studio? There's one over there.
Do you have any plans for own device development?
What do you mean exactly? So you could pretty much do it on device already, actually. So this is a builder in a cloud. So if you open a Telerik platform in Chrome on your device, then you could actually build the applications from within Chrome. You still need the companion app to compile it and move it there, but you can do it this way. But probably there's other better ways of doing it. Let me show you the other part very quickly, how the command line works, because there's some cool stuff that we can actually do. Let me close this. So if we were to do something similar from command line, I already have the project So I actually have the equivalent of, actually no, let me create a new project from scratch. No, I don't know. All right, so using the command line, I have the same project. I can actually go call TNS run Android, and this will go and build the application and put it directly onto my phone. But you already seen the building part. I'm gonna show you something more cool. So on the command line, we have the equivalent of the live sync, which is done via cable. So my phone is actually wired to the device. So I can say TNS live sync. I'm gonna add a watch for Android and build that. And basically what this is gonna do is building the project, and it will move the application onto my phone. And as well, we add a file watcher on the in the folder where all my code is, so that every time I make changes to my application, it will refresh the app directly on the device. So you don't even have to call sync or anything, it'll just be done automatically out of the box. So let's have a look at my code. So this is my application. So we'll probably start with Hello World again. Why not? The only thing is that it usually takes a while, because initially we have to copy all the files directly, and we're using, if any of you know Android development, we use ADB commands for each file individually. Just a small limitation. Okay, so I have my Hello World here. So I can, for example, go open my page and say, Hello World, happy times. Save that. And the app just refreshed. And this pretty much applies to any XML, JavaScript, or CSS files that you have directly, or TypeScript files that you have directly on your device. So we are going for a new release of command line next week, where we actually, because at the moment you have to use Grunt to compile all your TypeScript files to JavaScript, but as of next week, you actually, whenever you make changes to TypeScript, this will get compiled for you from the command line automatically, and then the app will be refreshed. So now I can pretty much be changing my application, and what is it? So I can show you my game again, how it looks, and then live sync will go push the changes, and now the game is here. Oh, I actually missed one part of my demo. Which is a good point. All right, so I completely missed that. So since the game I was showing you before, silly me, it wasn't very, very pretty, and obviously I was never able, I was never gonna get any money out of anyone. So what you can do is actually add some styling to it to make it a little bit prettier. So what I have here is basically I came up with some style. So I have, for example, a card label, a class. I have an info label and info classes. So basically I'm saying this component here is my card. Info label are those elements here. And the label and then actual info are those components here. So from my XML, I can do something like this where I have, let's start with this label. You see, I'm saying my CSS class should be card. And then basically, I'm setting the style to here. So now the button is the current card number is actually big and red, and you can actually see it when you play the game. And then additionally, you see the buttons don't have any CSS classes, and that's because I said I want all the buttons on this page to be like this. There's one thing we use in this naming convention that. Pretty much, if you have the XML file called appdownviewwithstyle.xml, in order to create a style specifically for this view, you just basically use the same name, except you do .css. If you want to have a style sheet that is global, then you basically use app.css, and that applies to all the views, not just one. Yeah? So the compile time errors can only be at the TypeScript level, because JavaScript doesn't have such thing as compilation. So TypeScript automatically, this is basically what Visual Studio. So let me show you if we have our up-down view model, and we're trying to set score to 0. Visual Studio should actually tell me you get a straight away underscore message say this is a string, should be a number.
What about debugging?
So debugging, you could pretty much, where is it? So I can go into App Builder, device lists, and my phone doesn't show for some reason. I'll probably have to refresh. When I do screen sharing, I can't debug normally, but basically what happens is my device would appear in here, and I can say attach to the process, and I can start debugging my application. Or from the command line, I can do something like this. So this works both on the same. At the moment, yes, yeah. So if you want to do an on-device debugging, yeah, they have to be physically attached. If you're using any simulators, so if you use like Genymotion or a native simulator, then it doesn't have to be attached. So let me just show you this quickly, and that'll be the last thing. Debug Android. I think that's the right command. So what happens is when you do the debugging, what we're doing, we're launching Google Tools, Google Developer Tools, and then basically pretty much like you would do when inspecting an element, so you have your code, and you can put breakpoints, and you can make changes in the console, et cetera, et cetera. So let me just load this up quickly. This should load in the meantime. But This is pretty much it. I mean, there's a lot of other things that you can really do with that. And the application I showed you, they're not particularly pretty because I'm a developer, not designer. But okay, so for the debugging tools, when you start the application, it stops at the very first line. So if there's something that is problematic at the very beginning and you don't have time to attach, this is a very good thing. But then I can actually, run it, and I get access to all my components and code, etc., as I keep going and using the application. So we can go start new game, and that should automatically load the components. The screen sharing is messing it up, so I can't really do it. Let me just show you one example, because I always get accused of NativeScript not producing pretty apps, and that'll be the last. We have this demo app where we're using a native UI controller. So you could pretty much, like you have in what's it called, in Gmail application, where you can, for example, slide to the left, you can favorite something, or slide to the right, unlike it, and I can change to favorites. So anything that was set to favorite now appears in favorites and things. So you can actually build quite pretty application. You just have to have a designer on your team, which is not me. All right, thank you very much.